of God with us. I apologize that there's no outline in the bulletin. I wanted to be ahead of the game, so I knew that Jill would need it by about Tuesday or Wednesday, so I prepared it Monday night, and I forgot to email it to her. So, but I was on my ball here. I was ready to go with it. But anyway, maybe next time. I'd like to talk to you today about a subject titled Worry or Trust. Because we worry about all kinds of things today. Right now, you may know that in my family, there's two weddings in progress here, sort of. We've got one coming up next May, and the other one is coming up the March after that. So we've got a lot of wedding thoughts being tossed around in the house and lots of phone calls with girls and things like that. And so it's a source of a little bit of stress and a little bit of tension from time to time about, you should be doing this and you're not doing this. And what is it you want? You want to do this? Well, that's stupid. And, lots of things like that going on. A lot of worry. We'll be glad when all of it is over and done with. We just wanted to talk about what you do this morning when there is worry and when there's stress. We talked in our teen class today about some different situations that different Bible characters had been in where they were under stress, where they had things to worry about, and there were problems in their lives. So I just wanted to examine a couple of Bible situations where there was some stress. And so, naturally, the first one that I picked was a wedding, since that was what's been going on. So in the course of the wedding planning, there are so many things to take care of. And that's part of the source of the stress, is that there's just so many elements of it that all have to come together perfectly. And if you miss just one, people look at it and say, wow, that was poorly planned. You may have gotten the other 1,000 things all right and all perfect, but that one thing goes wrong, and people say, wow, they did a really lousy job. And so just imagine you're putting together, maybe you volunteered to plan this wedding for somebody and to help with the reception and make sure everything went perfect. And so then you get there, and there's no cake. There are lots of things you might could miss out on at a wedding, but everybody notices if there's no cake. That's just one of those things that has to be there. And so, you get on the phone and you call the person that was supposed to do the cake. Where are you? What, that's this week? So you got a severe problem at that point, and it's going to be embarrassing. Well, there was a similar problem that was talked about in John chapter 2. It starts off and it says that Jesus and the apostles were invited to a wedding. So, first off, the first thing that strikes me about that is Jesus and his apostles were invited to a wedding. So, what does that say? Somebody was making out their guest list and said, let's invite Jesus. I bet he'd be a fun guy to have at the wedding. And we'll invite all of his friends and everything there. So that's kind of encouraging that he was a likable enough guy that you'd invite him to your wedding. But the equivalent of the wedding cake there back in those days was the wine. And it wasn't that they didn't have wine. They had some, but they didn't have enough. And so for some reason, this really concerned Mary. And I'm not certain exactly why she felt like it was her problem, but maybe she's the one that did the wedding planning. Maybe she's the one that everybody was going to kind of look at funny and say, you ran out of wine here. But for some reason, it really bothered her that they ran out of wine too early. Because when you run out of wine, the party is over at the first century wedding. So, what did Mary do? She could have gone to the people and railed at them and said, you really are terrible at this party planning stuff. You've already run out of wine. There were lots of bad things. Maybe she could have blamed herself. Well, I'm a friend of the family, and maybe I should have helped them a little bit more, or as I said, maybe she was in charge of the planning. So she could have went and gossiped about it to the other guests. Did you see what they run out of wine already? I'm sure whenever Jesus gets married, this won't happen. Now, I'll make sure there is plenty of wine then. But she didn't do any of those things. What she did was she took the problem to Jesus, and she summed it up very simply. She just said, they have no more wine. That was it. That was what she told him. They have no more wine. And so that was the extent of it. She didn't give him the solution. She didn't hand him some money and say, hey, go out and buy some more wine. Or she didn't say, hey, you know, why don't you turn some water into wine or something. It says in the Bible this was the first public miracle he had performed. And so, you know, I'm not really sure what was going on in Mary's mind, but she just took the problem to Jesus. I guess she felt like, okay, well, he's my oldest son. He will take care of the problem. So however he did it was fine with her, but that's what she did. They have no more wine. And the rest was up to him. She just told the servants, do whatever he says, but he's going to take care of this problem. Now we read in there that he wasn't real excited about taking care of the problem. He's like, it's not my time yet to be, you know, doing these kinds of things. But, he, you know, this is his mother, and she asked him to do her a favor, so he took care of the problem. So, why does God care about our little problems? I mean, have you ever thought about it? What did it matter to Jesus that there was no more wine? I've heard people speculate that this was Jesus' marriage and that he was getting married to Mary Magdalene at this time. And he didn't even know Mary Magdalene at this time. But, you know, you hear all kind of those things like that. But why was it his problem? You know, it wasn't his wedding. He was just a person that was invited to it. And why does he care about our little problems? If you think about it, most of the things we come to Jesus with are piddly. I mean, they're important to us because it's our problem, but in the whole scheme of things, it's just not that big a deal. God's got to worry about wars. There are wars going on in the world, and there's people killing each other, and there's natural disasters going on, and there's crimes being committed, and there's the everyday problems of overpopulation or global warming or whatever the thing is you're most concerned about and everything. You got all these big things happening in the world, and yet you want to come to Jesus about your little problem that you're having. So why would we expect that Jesus is going to care about our problem? And the answer is in that verse that Tyron read for us this morning. And it's one of those things you just kind of read over it real quickly and you don't really notice it too much. But I'd like to bring to your attention just a few words right at the end of it. And it says, they confronted me in the day of my disaster, but the Lord was my support. He brought me out into a spacious place. And then here's the important part. He rescued me because he delights in me. Just think about that for a minute. You know, God delights in you. Not just, okay, well, I'm not sorry I made you. You know, maybe you're not as good as your brother, but you're okay, I guess. But he likes you. God actually cares about you because he likes you, not because of the great things that you do or because you're so good looking or anything. God just likes you because you're you. So think about that for a minute. I mean, what do we do when there's somebody we like? I got a picture of a little niece that we had, and she's so cute and everything. What do you do whenever you get a picture of a family member like that? Where do you put it in your house? The refrigerator. That's exactly right, Sandy. You go home and you put it on your refrigerator. And that's where you do it. And we got pictures of all kinds of people on our refrigerator. And you don't go on the refrigerator unless you're somebody important. And so that's the way it works. So just imagine your picture right now is on God's refrigerator. He's got a big refrigerator, I'll be honest with you. But your picture's on his refrigerator. You know, your picture is in his billfold he carries around with him because he likes you. And so, you know, a lot of times there's people in life, and we say, I love them, just don't like them that much. You know, sometimes, okay, I'm obligated to love them because they're a brother in the Lord. I don't really want to hang out with them. You know, I don't have to like somebody to love somebody. And so we all the time hear that God loves us, but it's a whole different concept when you hear that God likes you, that God enjoys you. And there's lots of reasons why he might would have been willing to save us. You know, it could have been for his own glory. It's really embarrassing when you create a whole world and there's you create all these people and then they rebel against you and then they've committed sin and now you're going to have to send them all to eternal torment and everything. I'm sure all of the other gods and other universes would make fun of you if you do things like that. But, you know, that, none of that's happening. God saves us because that's what he wanted to do. It wasn't that he was afraid of being embarrassed or that it would look bad or that people would make fun of him or just to show how great he is and how powerful he is and all that. You know, we could picture that, but it's because he likes you. And we can tell he likes us. I mean, every spring he sends you flowers. That's probably more often than your spouse sends you flowers. But every spring, God sends you these wonderful, beautiful flowers, and he gives you a sunrise every morning. You know, that there's not a lot of friends that we have in this world that gives us that many gifts that often, just to show how much they care about us. He's given you this great world all around you that's just so perfectly suited for life here, and he gave you a Christmas gift. How many of your friends actually comes and gives you a Christmas gift? God gave you one. He gave you his own son as a Christmas gift. And you can argue about what day Christmas is and whether that's when Jesus was born, but that's how we celebrate it. So Jesus was our Christmas gift. And you just can't get a better gift than that for Christmas time. And you know, he's always waiting there listening when we're ready to talk. You know, a lot of our other friends we can't say that about. You know, they might say, hey, how you doing? But they don't want to hear how you're doing. They want you to say fine and keep walking. That's really what's going on there. But God is always ready to listen whenever you've got a problem. Plus, he has the power to help you with the problem, which is even more than most of our friends can do. Isaiah 62:5 puts it a different way. He says, as a bridegroom rejoices over his bride, so will your God rejoice over you. Just think about that for a minute. You know, usually you're pretty happy when you get married to somebody, and you're pretty happy with them. Whether you are 20 years later or not, you know, maybe a different story. But right at that time, when you got married to them, you were very happy about it. At least I hope so. So that's how God feels about you. It's just like the groom feels about the bride on the wedding day. That's one of the best days of their life on there. So, what did Jesus do? Let's go back to the wedding here. Mary has presented him with the problem. They have no more wine. So, he talks to the servants and he says, go draw out some water and take it to the master of the banquet. All right, now you're the servant. All right. They just had me fill these six jars, these 20 to 30 gallon jars here with water, and you want me to take this to the master of the banquet and let him taste it. It's like, look, guy, he may be drunk, but he's not that drunk. He's going to notice the difference here. But they did it. They did what Jesus told them to do. And it says, you know, take this water. In some translations, at least, take this water and go take it. To you know, it was not yet wine at that point, if you stop and think about that. So it took a little bit of confidence, I guess, for those servants to go and take that water up to the master of the feast. And, of course, we all know it was wine by the time it got there and how that turned out. But they could have just turned Jesus down flat. said, no, I'm not taking this water up there. You want to get me beaten? I'm not doing this. And so, you know, we know how it turned out, but they didn't know how it was going to turn out. So what do we do when Jesus tells us what to do? Do we refuse? You know, a lot of times our requests are financial. Well, let's be honest with it. A lot of times, a lot of the stress we have in life is because of our finances, because of the money situation that we have. Because, you know, money can't buy happiness, but it can smooth out a lot of other problems that you have in life. And money is the kind of thing it just seems like there's never enough of. No matter how many pay raises you get and how much you earn, the expenses always seem to climb faster than the pay does. And so, God doesn't want us to worry about money, so we worry about money, and then we turn open the Bible, and or we look in our topical Bible, and we read what it says about money, and it tells us to give. Okay, well, that doesn't sound right. Okay, I'm low on money, so what does God tell me to do? Go ahead and give some more. Okay, that just doesn't make good sense. How am I going to solve my financial problems? By giving more money to the church. That just doesn't sound like it works. But we had a saying here not long ago. I don't know whether Rick invented it or who it was, but said, you can't outgive God. Said, just try it sometime. And so what we find out a lot of times is we increase our giving and somehow things get better. I don't know how. Sometimes I can't explain it, and I'm the one that does the financial records in the family. But no matter how much I give, things don't seem to get any worse. And usually they seem to get better. And so on. So sometimes the things that God tells us to do don't really follow what our human minds tell us is a good idea. Just like, here, go take this water to the master of the banquet. It'll be all right. And that's what he tells us. You know, give more and your finances will be better. Try it and see. It's worth a shot. That's what the servants did, so that's what we should do. You know, sometimes somebody's wronged us, and our natural inclination is, what are we going to do to them now? And he tells us to forgive them. And that just doesn't sound like that's going to solve the problem at all. Now they're just going to keep doing it. But he asks us to forgive them. He says, you know, somebody makes a mistake to us. God says, be patient. Be patient. It's like, well, you know, really, if we want to fix the mistake, we got to go yell at them about it. God says, be patient with them, because you're going to make mistakes too. So here's the plan that he lays out. Identify the problem. Take it to Jesus. And then the one we forget, do what he says. That's the hard part. Do what he says. And he says, that's the solution. You know, how simple could it be? This is a three-step solution to any problem that you have. And this is one of the great benefits to being a Christian. So why don't we do that more often? I mean, so many times, the time we pray is because we can't think of anything else to do. That's our last resort. All right, when there's a problem, all right, let me go try to fix it. Well, I don't have enough money to fix it that way. Maybe I can go fix it this way. Well, I can't fix it that way. Okay, that's it. All right, I'll go pray. Done everything else I can do, I'll just go pray instead. And we were talking in class today. It says, when you come upon a car accident, what's the first thing you do? Do you go up and try to save the person's life and everything? I said, no, the first thing you do is when you see the accident, the phone comes out and you start dialing 911, right? Because you want to make sure help is on the way, first thing, before you get anything else done. And that's the way we're supposed to act when we have a problem. The first thing is that you ask for help. And then after that, you try to do what you can do. And God will bless those efforts. And they're probably going to be a little more productive than if we hadn't, because God's helping us now at that point. Some of the reasons why we don't ask for things more often is because we don't really feel like we deserve it. We think back and we say, you know, I really haven't been all that faithful. You know, I missed that worship service that I probably could have gone to if I'd tried a little harder. And you know, I've really said some harsh things to a few people. There's no reason why God's going to help me. Just no reason at all. And that's what that happened in the Bible. If we look back at that situation, whenever we remember about the feeding of the 5,000, sometimes the way the Bible is put together, we don't always think about what happened right after another thing. But the limited commission had just happened. Jesus had sent all of his apostles out, and they had healed people, and they cast out demons, and then they got all back together. And then they had this big crowd, and Jesus was really concerned about John the Baptist, who had just been killed. But, you know, this crowd showed up, so he preaches to them. And he says, all right, we need to give these people some food. And he's testing. The Bible even specifically says Jesus is testing the apostles to see what they're going to say. He says, all right, we need to get them some food. So they've just been performing all these miracles. And they say, you know, 8 months' wages wouldn't buy enough food for all these people. Let's just send them away and let it be their problem. You know, they can go out into the towns, they can go to McDonald's and buy them something to eat if that's what they want to do. But it's not our problem, Jesus, because we can't do anything about it. So, Jesus could have, because they haven't been very faithful, said, all right, and that's what we'll do, we'll send them away. But Jesus is faithful even whenever we're not. That's the good thing about it. They'd just been healing all those people, and they failed the test that Jesus put in front of them. But in 2 Corinthians 12:9, it says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. So God is faithful even whenever our faith is weak. And God will help us whether or not we deserve it. Because I'll tell you right now, we don't deserve it. So, but that doesn't matter. That's the good thing about our situation, is that it doesn't matter whether we deserve it, because God already knows we don't, because we live sinful lives. Even when we try to do good, we still make mistakes, and we still sin, and we don't deserve to be saved. We certainly don't deserve anything else that God is willing to give us. But 2 Timothy 2:13 says, if we are faithless, he will remain faithful. So I ask you, God blesses us because of his grace and because of his faithfulness, not because our faith is so strong. And whenever things look hopeless, God's still there. He's ready to take care of us. He wants us to trust him, and he wants us to ask for help. But a lot of times we don't, just because of our own attitude toward it. He's going to help us because he's God. And that's why he deserves our worship, and that's why he deserves our praise. Because that's one of the most wonderful things about having the God that we have. But in order to have these blessings and have access to it, you need to place your faith in him. You need to be in Christ in order to have access to that power. So we have an opportunity this morning. If you're not a member of the Lord's church, if you're not a faithful member of the church that Christ set up, you've got an opportunity to become one. You've got an opportunity to have access to all the blessings that God has up there just waiting to pour out on you. And sometimes they're not all physical, they're not all visible, and he doesn't promise he's going to make you rich, but he's got blessings for you. Sometimes they're spiritual, sometimes they're material, but he's waiting to bless you. And if you haven't been faithful, God's still going to be faithful, whether you have been or not. But if you haven't been faithful and you'd like to be more faithful, and you'd like to have the prayers of the church, you've got an opportunity this morning to come forward and receive some prayers from the church.
and to become more faithful than you have in the past.